Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the Playoff Push podcast here on whatever platform you're listening on, whether it be Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. And today we have a very special guest with us, broadcaster for the Aberdeen Iron Birds in the Orioles system, Michael Marcantonini. How are we doing today, my man?
Hey, what's up, Jack? I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. Always good to hop on a podcast and talk ball. And it's always great to hop on a podcast that one of my former campers at Sports Broadcasting Camp does. So this is awesome, man.
Oh yeah, and especially this is our first baseball episode. We touched on football, we've touched on basketball. Baseball's been in the wings and it's ready to go right here with one of the guys who's in it in a very large aspect.
Yeah, I mean it's cool to see what you're doing with the podcast with how you're mixing in all different sports and getting different guests on. So happy that you wanted to talk ball and bring me on to do it. So always it's always a fun time talking ball and happy to provide any insight that I can doing what I'm doing as well.
Of course, love it. So how about we start out with you, your experience, calling Aberdeen Ironbirds games with that Orioles system, which is notoriously super loaded these last few years. You've had Jackson Holliday go through. Enrique Bradfield just got called up last night. How does it feel to call those guys who are now making their way up to the majors, ready to make a major impact?
It's really exciting. It's been such a fun ride since I joined the Ironbirds towards the end of the 2022 season. I mean, when they hired me in August of 2022, I mean, I called the last couple homestands and then it was right into a playoff push. We had already clinched a playoff spot when I got there and, came within one win of a championship that first year that I was there. So, I mean, right away I saw not only, really solid players and just player development in front of my eyes, but I saw winning. Last year, yeah, like you mentioned, Jackson Holliday, having him for 2 months was the big standout part of the season. Samuel Basayo, another fast rising prospect in the O's system. We had him for the final 5 weeks of the year. Really all season we had talent. The team had so many exciting wins. I mean, we had 10 walk-off wins last year. I mean, it was electric. And then this year, we have four pitchers combined for a no-hitter, the third in franchise history, the first in our ballpark. Had a bunch of big games, comeback wins, walk-off wins, just exciting moments, top prospects. And it's just been such a fun ride. And I mean, not only are they all great players that have come through, but a lot of really good people too.
Oh yeah, Basayo is one of those guys I was going to touch on in a minute. Maybe a guy that flies under the radar on certain people's prospect list when they look it up and down. But how does it feel to be able to, not even just the high stars like the Holidays and the Bradfields of the world, but the guys who have maybe stayed down in Aberdeen, maybe climbed up to Double A, those guys in getting to have personal experience with them through the all mic'd up series. What does that series mean to you when it comes to your job?
Yeah, well, first, that's a great question because it's not always, not everybody just continues to move up levels after half a season. I mean, there are guys that struggle and have to spend a full year at a level, maybe even more than a year at a specific level. And that doesn't mean that they're not good players. So I'm glad that you brought that up. But it's been awesome getting to know these guys on a personal level. I mean, for all these guys, it's a working relationship that, I have with them, that the broadcaster would have with the players. But I mean, a lot of these guys are legitimately my friends too. We keep in touch in the off season, sending messages here and there. Just a lot of good guys, and I love being around them. I mean, because well, I mean, we're all human, we're all people, and that's the goal with the All Mic'd Up series is to showcase who these guys are as people and not just as athletes, because that's so important. I think the casual fan or just the general in general, the fans out there, they look at these guys as yeah, they're making a lot of money, they're playing a sport, they're athletes, they're public figures, they're celebrities. A lot of them, in a sense, some even before they get to the big leagues like Jackson, of course, but they're all people and they're all, they have the same interest as us. We talk about music, we talk about fantasy football. These guys were plugged into the MLB trade deadline and what was going on just as a broadcaster or a writer or a fan would be. So it's cool. I mean, I love asking these guys questions that they don't hear on a regular basis. And it makes for really fun episodes. We get a lot of laughs out of it. And I mean, my goal is just to make them feel comfortable. I mean, for these guys, when they get to the big leagues, they're going to have cameras and microphones in their face all the time. So if I can maybe help prepare them for that by having them on all mic'd up and doing these interviews, then I feel good that I'm, not just doing it for me where I'm getting good interviews and showcasing who they are, but it's definitely beneficial for them as well.
Love it. Everyone, if you have not already, tune into the All Mic'd Up series. It's such a blast to watch every single time. Loving all the episodes, just seeing how the guys in Aberdeen are doing. But speaking of, asking questions to the players, have you heard of like Bat Boys Baseball, all on social media? Those
Yeah, they're
guys
awesome.
that they're super fun. Like the questions they get to ask those players, like name the entire lineup during their MLB debut, or like what their favorite song is at the moment. Like watching stuff like that always makes my day, whether it be, you or them, or even some others that I might see randomly on my TikTok feed,
Yeah, well, I appreciate you hyping up all mic'd up. It's been really fun doing it. And the goal is just to make it different and unique and fun. And yeah, guys like the Bat Boys Baseball, and some other content creators out there, they do a great job making it fun and interesting. And that's my goal. Like pretty much at the end of every episode, I'll do a teammate question round where I'm asking the guys about their teammates, a series of five
Oh,
questions.
yeah.
Like, who's got the best hair? Who's the best chef on the team? I mean, who has the worst taste in music? Like funny questions like that that are going to get like fun answers, get them talking about their teammates and kind of peel back the curtain of like, the player to player friendships on a team. Because, the most people don't really see that.
Yeah. So back to actually calling the Ironbirds game. Do you have a specific favorite moment or game that you've ever called? You have the no-hitter, you have the Luke Combs play. What's your favorite?
Yeah, I mean those two are definitely in the top three. I mean, right off the bat. I mean the Jackson Holiday walk off where I used the Luke Combs lyrics and then he saw it the next day and said it was the best home run call he's ever heard. I feel like that's always going to be number one until, really until I get a big moment in the big leagues, which I'm confident will happen. But I mean, that's definitely number one just because of how much it blew up. I mean, because of Luke's tweet, it was already getting a lot of buzz before Luke saw it, but because of Luke's tweet, that MLB Pipeline's tweet, the video in that tweet ended up getting over 1 million views, which is insanely cool to
Wow.
know that, like, I mean, not everybody knew that was me. I mean, it was my voice in the background. It didn't say like my name or anything like that, but it was really cool. Like over 1 million people saw, heard my voice and saw the clip and heard the call. So easily number one. Number two, I got to put the no-hitter at number two. I mean, that was awesome. Just because like how often do you see no-hitters? I mean, it's of course more common in the big leagues when these pitchers are stretched out and they're going deeper into games, but in the minor leagues, you're rarely going to see a minor league complete game. So you're rarely going to see one guy throw a no-hitter. So it's pretty much always going to be a combined no-hitter. So it's really tough because every pitcher that pitches in that game has to be on. One guy gives up a hit, it's over. So the fact that four guys combined for it with our catcher behind the dish calling a great game, it was special. And right out of the All-Star break, it had been like a busy day at the ballpark, and then I sit down and call a no-hitter, which was incredible. Like you can't prepare for that. So that's number two. And I guess number three, if I didn't have those two big moments, this probably would be number one. But getting to call the final out of the North Division series in 2022 that sent us to the championship series, I mean, that was special. Like I'll remember that call word for word for the rest of my life, just as I will for the other two. I mean, that was sweet.
That's super cool. Yeah, I knew those were going to be the top two. I had a really, really good feeling.
Yeah, I mean, and just personally, like, I mean, every day I get to do this, like, I don't take it for granted. I'm so excited to call these games, and it means a lot to me, knowing that I have the opportunity. But just thinking, like, where I was a few years ago in my career, and then just rattling off a list of my top three calls are a walk-off homer that Luke Combs said was the best he ever had, a no-hitter, first in our ballpark, and a playoff series, the play that clinched our first ever series win in franchise history to go to the championship. Like that's just an incredible top three. And I'm definitely thankful, for all the people that helped me get to that point.
And you're only getting started when it comes to that major league system. You're still going to be climbing your way up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. I mean, really, whether it's in the Orioles organization or somewhere else, anywhere where I can get an opportunity. And I think that's any broadcaster's goal.
To many more amazing calls. We can all just sit there and watch as you do it.
I appreciate it, man.
So, another thing about baseball. So, most people over the last, however many years have been thinking the sport's starting to die out. We need to find a way to revitalize it. What do you think would be some great ways to grow the game? I know this is an important topic to you.
Yeah, I mean that's the biggest thing for me. I think that's really the root of everything I do within broadcasting is I want to grow the game. I want people to love the game on the level that I do, or at least, get to a point where more people are on that level. I think Major League Baseball has done a great job the last few years with putting in the pace of play rules. Of course, the pitch clock has helped a lot. I mean, I say it all the time, the pitch clock's a broadcaster's best friend. I mean, it cuts out all the unnecessary downtime. And the game's still great. Things like that. The extra wild card, to make it five playoff teams in each league. I mean, that's huge. But yeah, I mean, with all mic'd up, that's the goal. Grow the game, show who these people are. When I broadcast, I want to tell stories to help grow the game and not just spew out stats all day. But I think one of the biggest ways that Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball could work together to grow the game is that I think every Major League team, the network that they broadcast their games locally on, so like NBC Sports Philadelphia for the Phillies, MASN for the Orioles and the Nationals, NESN for the Red Sox, YES Network for the Yankees, SNY for the Mets.
SNY, yeah.
Yeah, just an example. Like, I think every big league team should have at least one minor league game for all their affiliates broadcast on their regional sports networks every year. And there are some networks that already do this. Like NESN does some Red Sox games, and the YES Network and SNY have had both the Hudson Valley Renegades and the Brooklyn Cyclones in my league on their networks on days where the Yankees and Mets are off. So just to get programming. So I think that every regional sports network that broadcasts big league games should do that for every minor league affiliate at least once every year when they need some programming, because I think that would be a great way to not only showcase who these players are at the minor league level, so people get to know them and know their names and faces before they get to the big leagues, but it would be huge exposure for minor league broadcasters. And I think just everybody involved with minor league baseball, because there's so much that goes into the planning side of the management and business side of minor league baseball, not just what happens on the field. So I think it would be great exposure for everybody, and I think just overall good for the game.
Yeah, exactly. The more exposure for everybody, the more exposure that the network gets, the more exposure that the teams get and the players, and it keeps going down and down that ladder, and everyone benefits. There's not really a negative side to it.
Right. Yeah, and I know money is the most important thing in all these decisions, but maybe you wouldn't make a ton of money having a minor league game on for every affiliate at some point throughout the year, but you're not losing money. And I think, like you said, it's really a win-win. It's all positive, because how easy would it be to send down maybe you don't need the entire camera crew and the production crew that you need for a big league game. Send half of that or a third of that, put on a production on a day where the big league team is off, and just showcase what's happening at the minor league level, because most people, just when the players get to the big leagues, that's when they start to really know who they are, even if they do know their names, like Jackson Holliday, for example. And when Samuel Basayo gets to the big leagues, everyone will know who he is. But how much are you going to know about him and the journey to get to the big leagues? So I think it would be really cool to showcase on a bigger stage at some point throughout a minor league season every year.
I love that. I think that's a great idea. That should be implemented pretty soon. I think it's a great way to, especially for the minor league teams that are not in such major cities, maybe expose the people of their local town to the team. Maybe they get more interested in it. Like, that's how I was intrigued in the Trenton Thunder, because they were super close to where I grew up.
Yeah, I think it would be so good for the game to showcase what's happening on the minor league level on a bigger stage. I mean, there's so many other things that you can do as well. I think that, I mean, MLB Network has done some, they've had some minor league games, like the AAA National Championship, for example, is on MLB Network every year. They do some minor league plays of the week segments on some of their different programs throughout the week. But I think if there was an extra effort, whether it's MLB Network, MLB.com, the regional sports networks, if there was a bigger emphasis on showcasing what's happening in the minors, I think it would benefit everybody. And I think more people would not only enjoy the game, but understand it and have a better feel for what goes on at all levels. I mean, I hope people listen to this podcast and say, like, man, that's a great idea. Let's try to hope like some important decision makers hear this and say, hey, like, this is something we could do or would love to do. So that's the hope, is just try to grow the game any chance you get.
Exactly. So I was pondering this question for a bit, and I know this is already in the process of happening, but I think a big way that the game's growing right now, as dumb as it may sound, banana ball. I think that's pulling in so many people that maybe were not so interested in the sport to begin with, but just because they see people, lighting their bats on fire and dancing on the mound, I think that's a fun way to, at least get people interested in a similar version of the sport. Eventually, they can merge into the primary.
Yeah, I mean, banana ball is great. And I think the best part about it is they're not trying to be regular baseball. They're not trying to compete with Major League Baseball or minor league baseball. They're just doing their own thing, having fun doing it, growing the game. That's that's that buzz term. That's what they're doing. It's awesome. I mean, I have a friend who plays on the party animals. I know a guy who is playing for one of the new teams, the Visitors, that they're bringing in. Now they've got like four teams going. But it's just so cool to see what they're doing and how much people like it. The fact, the games are 2 hours. You know when you're going, you're not going to be there all night, and you know you're going to see some fun stuff. It's really not even about what happens on the field. It's about the show and the entertainment value of it. And a lot of times that's what minor league baseball is like. I mean, the games matter, but the goal is to entertain fans when they're at the ballpark. And I think if Major League Baseball, and I'm sure there are some people taking notes on what Banana Ball is doing, if they found ways to just continue to get people in the ballpark or, make these games more affordable, whether it's tickets, parking, concessions, all that, just find a way to have the bridge the gap between the players on the field and the fans in the stands, then you can really have something special. And of course, the big leagues aren't going to do what Banana Ball does on the field, but there are ways to implement some of that style and strategy into what they're doing.
But they're making big splashes. They sold out Fenway. They sold out Nationals Park. I would even compare it to like an athletic circus, but you still get the baseball aspect, which
Yeah,
is so great.
and that's what I think that's what makes it so fun is like you're going to see baseball. You're seeing guys who played at least at the college level, some at the professional level, some high up at the professional level. So when you see them actually getting down to it, like you're not just seeing all stunts and trick plays. There is some actual baseball going on. Like it's guys that do belong out on a professional diamond that can hold their own. It looks like pro players out there because they are, but then you also get all the fun stuff. Like you're never in your seat for, and I haven't been to a game, I've just watched clips and things, but you're never in your seat just kind of hanging out, waiting for that next run to score or that next like some type of action to happen. Like there's always something going on, which makes it really cool.
Yeah, I think D. Gordon played for the Savannah Bananas at a point. Maybe it was for one game. I think I saw something about that. I feel like some other former major leaguers too that I can't think of.
Yeah, I mean, I
But
know
I.
Severino's done it, Eric Burns. I mean,
Yes.
it's been cool seeing former big leaguers embrace it and get involved because I think that's what you need. I mean, you need like once these guys retire, you don't want them to just disappear and never hear from them again. I think in other sports, maybe football and basketball, I think the personalities are bigger and maybe the marketing of the players is bigger. So once guys retire, you kind of still see them in the public light. So with baseball players, it's cool seeing them do things like that.
At the end of the day, baseball's a game. It's a fun game. And I think Savannah Bananas and the rest of that Banana Ball League do it the right way and get to show people the sport while, still keeping maybe some more fun aspects to the general public, but still wading them slowly into the actual game.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It's been pretty cool.
But outside of that, going back to the MLB, let's talk a bit about the playoff push. All these teams that are
Absolutely.
racing it out. So, right now, we got three teams in the American League with 69 or 70 wins: Baltimore, Cleveland, and my Yankees. And the National League, we got the Phillies and we got the Dodgers, both sitting at 69 with the Brewers behind at 67. So it's not looking like any team's going to reach 100 this year, but we're going to have a ton of teams in that 90 to 100 margin. So how are we feeling about the American League East? Let's start off there with the Orioles and Yankees tied at one.
The AL East is maybe the best division race in baseball because one, you've got the Yankees, of course, the most historic franchise in all of baseball, and they've just got some serious superstars on that roster. With a healthy Garrett Cole and then Judge and Soto doing what they're doing, I mean, that's a fun team. And then the Orioles, who have so much young talent and even some good veteran talent, a guy like Anthony Santander having a career year. If it weren't for some of the big bashers in the AL, I mean, he might be in the MVP race. But it's cool seeing a team like Baltimore, maybe a smaller market, a fan base that is building back up. It's cool seeing those two teams go at it and fight for this division. But I think what it will come down to is depth in the AL East. And I think right now, I mean, it's crazy to say, but even with all the pitching injuries that the Orioles have had, I think the Orioles might be just a little bit deeper than the Yankees. I think the Yankees maybe have a little bit more top-tier star talent with those three guys that I mentioned. But I think it probably comes down to the final week of the season. And I mean, one of those teams is going to get a wild card. And whoever gets the other wild card and has to play them in that three-game series, I mean, they're not going to be happy about it.
The most ridiculous thing about this Orioles Yankees, playoff push for the one spot is that I believe they play each other September 24th through 26th. So right at the end of the season, I think it's a head-to-head series that will potentially decide the AL East crown.
Yeah, I mean, if whenever these two teams meet up again, I think both teams are going to try to rework their rotations so they have their best three arms going in that series. And now it's tough to do that late in the season because every game matters, not just that those games, but those games of course mean so much more because you can control your own destiny in them. But Corbin Burns is going to pitch in that series. I mean, if the Orioles have to rework their rotation to make it happen, Gerrit Cole is going to pitch in that series. And maybe they go up head to head, which will be awesome. But it's so good, I think, for baseball, the fact that not even just in the AL East, but across the rest of the league, that there are so many close races. And like you said, maybe there are no 100 win teams this year, or it's not going to be three or four like we've seen in years past. But there's a lot of parity towards the top, and having those extra wild card spots only make it more exciting because every team, except for maybe a handful of cellar dwellers, is in it for a postseason chance.
Yeah, I agree. I think I go back to your previous point. I think that the Orioles probably do have the better depth, mainly because I think they also have a very strong AAA, which if they need to bring anyone up for said playoff push, I think it's more than doable, especially with Holiday heating up now and when healthy, arguably one of the best rotations in baseball. They just have such an intense, consistent firepower. Whereas the Yankees heavily rely on their first four in the order. Like I love me some Judge, love me some Soto, love me some Volpe. But once you get back to those seven, eight, nine spots, it gets kind of scary every few days.
Yeah, I mean, if you asked me if I had to, who are the between the Yankees and Orioles lineups, who are the top two players combined between those two lineups? I mean, as good as Gunnar Henderson is, I'm still taking Judge and Soto as the top two combined between those two lineups. I mean, they're so good. I mean, we're talking top five, maybe even top three hitters in baseball up there with Ohtani. But then you look at the Orioles lineup overall. I mean, there's so much depth because you have Gunnar and Adley, but then Santander is just on another level right now. And Jackson Holliday could end up being their best acquisition that they got around the trade deadline. Of course, he was in their system coming up. But when you can bring up guys like from the minor leagues like that, or maybe you have a guy coming off the IL around that time of year, it's almost like another trade acquisition. So if he continues to play well, that's huge. I mean, Corbin Burns at the top of the rotation. Zach Eflin is going to be an absolute X factor down the stretch.
That
I
was
mean,
a huge trade. That was a big trade.
we've already seen how underrated of a pitcher he is. He's just really solid. I mean, the fact that he doesn't walk guys, the strikeout totals may not always be that high, but because he doesn't walk guys, he can get away with giving up some more hits. I think he gave up 10 hits in his O's debut in 6 innings, but didn't walk anybody. So that's why he only gave up 3 runs. And he's going to give you 6, 7 innings every night, eat up innings, and keep you in game. So, I mean, to have him as your number two starter going into the playoffs and going into this Yankee series coming up in September, I mean, that is where we're talking about an absolute difference maker.
Another big aspect for the Yankees, though, is I believe Clarke Schmidt will return soon, who the Yanks have been missing for a couple months at this point. And he was having a pretty solid year up until the injury. Nothing was really, off about his game. This was easily his best year. And he's slowly making his way back up to the majors. He had an ERA around 2.5 up until the injury. So he could be a huge factor in this, especially in the wild card. The division is not won, but he's one of those guys that could sit behind Cole and just hold down innings and just hope Clay Holmes doesn't blow it because he's going to make me lose my mind.
Yeah, Clark's just looked like a different pitcher this year. And it's great to see that because the Yankees needed somebody to step up and not only give them quality innings, but be a reliable option. Like, it's not just give us 6 innings and keep us in the game. It's give us 6 innings and throw a gem out there, give it 1 or 2 runs, rack up a lot of strikeouts. And he was doing that. It was a bummer that he got hurt. And yeah, if they have him down the stretch producing even close to what he was doing early in the season, that makes that rotation deeper and scarier. And you don't have to rely on Gerrit Cole throwing an absolute gem every time out because, you know, it's in the past, you know, if Gerrit Cole doesn't shove, then it's like, oh, the Yankees are in trouble because what are they going to get from the guys after him? Now it's like, okay, if Gerrit Cole doesn't shove, you've got some quality arms that you trust in big game situations after.
Yeah, ignoring that 3-game span where he was absolutely horrendous, Luis Gil has came out of the blue and became arguably a rookie of the year candidate. And I've always been a big Gil guy. You know, I watched him play in the minors. I was like, this guy's going to be good. His first, you know, MLB moment, he didn't really show too great stuff, but then he came up this year. And besides those 3 games, he's been stellar.
I think it goes back to the point I was making earlier, when you kind of brought it up. Like, not every prospect in the minor leagues moves fast throughout the minor league system. It's not always low A, high A, double A, triple A, like in a 3-4 year span. I mean, guys spend multiple years at levels. Sometimes they have to go back down and figure some things out at a different level. So for Heel to come up to the big leagues and not have immediate consistent success, I mean, that didn't mean he wasn't a good pitcher. So the fact that he's been so good this year, again, save for that one rough stretch that he had. I mean, that's baseball. I mean, I think we as baseball people and fans, in some sense, are so used to seeing guys come up and be absolute stars. You know, Julio Rodriguez, Bobby Witt Jr., Juan Soto, Mike Trout, and Bryce Harper. I mean, these guys early on in their careers were stars already, but not everybody is that when they come up. You're gonna get hit around, or you're gonna strike out a lot, whether you're a position player or a hitter early on sometimes, and Heel has definitely figured some things out this year.
Yeah, he made his major league debut in 2021 and is still in rookie of the year contention in 2024. So he's been, you know, taking time getting through into the Yankees system, but he's sitting here in the middle of August with a 3.06 ERA poised to take the bump, I believe, tomorrow. So he's performing much better than anyone would have guessed at the start of the year, even me, when I'm like a very big heel guy coming into the year.
That's what makes the Yankees scary, whether they're in the wild card series or they win the division and have to wait for their opponent. If Luis Gil could go out there and throw six shutout innings with 10 Ks in a playoff game, I mean, it could happen. I mean, a lot of these guys could do that with the Yankees. That's why they're definitely more dangerous than they were in previous years.
Then we got arguably the most dangerous division this year, the most jam-packed, which is something I never thought I would say when regarding the AL Central. You got three teams in the playoffs right now if the season ended today. You got Cleveland, you got Minnesota, and you got KC. Where did this Royals team come from?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that there may be three AL Central playoff teams, but I think with the Royals, you're seeing a few years of just really strong work throughout the organization. I mean, you know, a really solid front office and just good player development system. You know, they've missed on some draft picks for sure over the last few years, but they've really hit on a bunch of others, and we're seeing the veteran leader in Salvador Perez, the fact that he's wanted to stick around, and the fact that he signed the long-term extension, I think that tells you a little bit about the culture in KC. Like, it's a good place to play. He's won there. He wants to be there when they win again. So the fact that they were able to keep him around, I'm sure he's been so good for these young players, but it really helps when, you know, your number two overall draft pick from a few years ago looks like a future Hall of Famer. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. is that good. He's already, I think, a top five player in the sport. You know, easily top 10. But yeah, just some really nice work around, I think, the margins of the roster, smart trades where they, you know, they got Cole Ragans last year. I think it was a trade with the A's where they brought him in
Yeah.
for like a rental player, you know, things like that. Like, that's how you accelerate a rebuild when you can make big moves like that. Jack Caglione, you know, shout out to his
Hugh,
father, Lozano.
he's gonna be a heck of a ball player,
I know,
Caglione.
man.
He's a menace. He's
Like,
unfair.
you know, you draft guys like that and you bring guys into the organization, like, good things are going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, so I went to a game last year. It was Phillies Royals at the bank. And I watched Brad Keller pitch, and I'm like, this team sucks. And then we come into this year, and they're sitting in a playoff spot. just showing how good this front office is in KC and how hard these players have worked, especially Bobby Witt Jr. having the breakout year of his life, putting up ridiculous numbers on every side of the ball. You want average? He got it. You want power? He got it. You want fielding? Boy, does he got that for you. He's just playing like the best overall player in baseball. Might not be the MVP, but he's playing the best on all aspects of the game.
Right. I mean, he's a superstar. He's a type of talent that can carry a team, even if you don't need him to single-handedly carry the team. But I love the moves they made in the offseason in terms of pitching. I mean, bringing in Seth Lugo, very under the radar signing. I mean, that contract's looking like an absolute steal. I mean, Michael Wacha, solid veteran presence. And, you pick up Michael Lorenzen at the trade deadline, another vet who has pitched in big games. And to supplement that with the young talent, they've got a lot of good things going on there.
Exactly. So we have a couple few more minutes here, and let's go back to the NL for a minute. So this NL, you got the six playoff teams. You got Philly, LA, Milwaukee, Arizona, San Diego, and Atlanta. But then you have another six teams within 5 games of the playoffs. Mets, Cardinals, Giants, Cubs, Reds, Pirates. This could switch around very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a different team in the playoff picture, like holding down those spots. Could be a different one or two teams every week for the rest of the regular season. I mean, that's how close it is. And I give a lot of credit to some of the teams in the National League that maybe looked like they were kind of out of it and could be sellers, but they decided to buy because, hey, why not? Well, we're only a couple games out of that wild card. Let's try to sneak in. We don't have to trade our top prospects to mortgage the future to do it, but let's see what we can do by buying and still keeping our top guys for the future. And I mean, the Pirates made a handful of under the radar moves. I think that's the one that stood out the most for me because at the beginning of the season, we're thinking like the Pirates in the playoff hunt. I mean, no way. But we've seen how quickly they've turned around and become a competitive team because of that pitching. Paul Skenes, Jared Jones and some other guys filling in. But it's been cool to see so many teams actually say, hey, let's go for it this year.
Skenes is such a wild player. He's so abnormally talented. Like he had his worst start of the year just in his last one, and it was only 4 runs against the Dodgers. Rodon has let up 4 runs in the first 5 batters at least twice this year. So that's pretty impressive, especially for a rookie.
Yeah, I mean he's just so advanced as a player. But I mean even though he is a number one overall draft pick with a 100 plus mile an hour fastball and nasty off speed stuff, I mean even with all that, like he guys shouldn't be able to do what he's doing right now. I mean I said the same thing about Jackson Holliday last year as he carved up every level of the minor leagues and got to the big leagues at 20 years old. I mean guys aren't supposed to do that. Like it's not the norm. It's not ever going to be the norm. So to see him doing what he's doing on the biggest stage is impressive because he was, he started the All-Star game less than a full year after he was drafted, or maybe I guess maybe it was like a day or so later after he was drafted, but essentially a year later. I mean, that's not supposed to happen.
That's like a very, very rare incident. And when you have a guy who, performs super well in college, gets drafted super high and comes up and actually performs to the level as a rookie, that's a guy you need to look at and be like, wait a minute, could this guy be around for a long time? The only question with him is, will he be able to prevent injury? Because, you can't pump 103 forever.
Right. Yeah. And then I think that like keeping him healthy is huge. And so, I mean, right now the Pirates are a handful out of a wild card spot. So it's probably not their year, but just the fact that they added to say, create the environment that, hey, we're going to still try to win these games. We're not just going to sell. That's huge. And I mean, next year they'll be right in it. But I mean, I'm loving what I'm seeing on the National League side because it's so good for baseball. I mean, all these fan bases. These fans are going to be watching meaningful games down the stretch. And a lot of fan bases, there doesn't need to be meaningful baseball for people to still care and watch late in the season. But for others, it does. So, I mean, the fact that all these teams are in it and we could see flip-flopping back and forth every week, every couple days, the rest of the way, that's fun for the game.
Also, these miracle Mets, everyone's already given up on them. They were like, this is a failed attempt at a dynasty. Steve Cohen goes and gets all these guys and never makes anything out of it. But these guys are surging. They're only half a game behind Atlanta to take over second in the NL East.
I'll never understand the Mets, man. I really don't, because like it's always the LOL Mets, or this is classic Mets, whatever happens, whether it's
But now
injury.
it's the OMG Mets.
Yeah, it's I think it's a new era. I mean, it's really cool to see. And who would have thought that the Mets would have been doing this with these players versus the future Hall of Famers that they tried to do it with the last couple of years. But I mean, they a couple of years ago they kept their core intact. I mean, of course, bringing Lindor over, I mean, he's playing at an MVP type level at times this year. So clearly they made the right decision with hiring Carlos Mendoza as manager. He's done a great job. David Stearns, I mean, everybody would have, any team would have taken him as leading the baseball ops department. So that was a good move there, but it is kind of crazy. Like, I'll never understand it. I mean, because next year we'd think, all right, now it's time for the Mets to build off this year, and then they could just finish in fourth place in the East. Like, it could happen. You just never know with this team.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, who would have ever thought that one random shortstop making a song would and a stupid purple blob from McDonald's would change this Mets season and potentially give them a playoff spot? And who knows? It'll take a great run, but maybe another Subway Series could be in the wings.
It's possible. I mean, yeah, like I said, like who would have thought the Mets to be even in the playoff hunt? And then if they somehow end up in the World Series, like people are gonna be like, what? Like, I mean, but it could happen. It really could.
And shout out to Philly for being able to perform at this level. It's super impressive seeing guys, maybe like Stott, just go out there and show what they're made of. Boehm's having an incredible year. Just this playoff push from both leagues is looking super strong, and I can't wait to see what the next month and a half has in store.
Right. I mean, the Phillies have played some bad baseball the last few weeks. I mean, it's been rough. I mean, they've had a tough schedule and long road trip. That's not easy. But even so, to this point, with as poorly as they've played, to be 20 games over 500 and to be tied for the best record, that's so impressive. And I think the job that Dave Dombrowski and company have done in the short time that they've been there to turn this thing around and supplement their big free agent signings with the homegrown talent, and also make some nice moves around the margins with trades and under the radar pickups. I mean, you're seeing how well a really good front office operates and how it's translating to wins.
Love it. So we will keep you updated on this playoff push as it progresses. Still have a month and a half left of this MLB season. Mike, I want to thank you very much for coming on this episode today. It was great having you, getting to hear from the perspective of a minor league broadcaster, which of course, what I want to do, and being able to just talk some ball for a few minutes.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jack. This was a ton of fun. I love talking baseball on this level. I mean, when I'm broadcasting games, I don't always get to talk about the game and the big leagues, on this level. So the fact that I got to do this, and I just love it. Baseball, I'm passionate about baseball and broadcasting, and always happy to hop on the podcast. Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you very much for everyone listening at home. This has been the Playoff Push Podcast. The update schedule will be switching to some weekday. I will figure it out probably either Tuesday or Wednesday mornings after this episode. And that's going to be it from me. So have a great rest of your day, and let's go, Yankees.